You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hey, happy Thursday to you. We appreciate you being with us today. We'll talk more about Arkansas's big win over Tennessee with David Ubben of The Athletic. A little bit later in the show, Justin McLeod of D1 Softball will join us. There's some interesting things going on with Razorback Softball that we'll have a conversation with him about. And Chip Souza will be on desk with me as we talk about all the latest going on with Razorback Sports. But first, David Ubben from The Athletic. He was in Fayetteville on Saturday night for that big 19-14 win by the Razorbacks. David, we appreciate you being with us.
Thanks for having me, guys. It's always good to catch up with the Hogs and what's going on back in my neck of the woods.
So, yeah, so yeah. For people who don't know, you're from Springdale, and I guess you kind of got your feet wet working here for the newspaper.
I did. Chip hired me. We were joking the other night in the press box that Chip was coming to see his favorite junior high correspondent of all time. So, you know, listen, I miss the days that we had a whole junior high page in the paper, but time comes for us all, I suppose, right?
I mean, for anybody who's in sports writing, or for the most part, we all remember going and covering junior high sports. I can remember, I was working for the Traveler, and you know, I might be covering the Razorbacks on a Saturday night, and then on Monday night I'm covering Ramey and Central High School girls basketball jamboree. I mean, you cut your teeth and you learn some things doing those things.
You do. It's an interesting time, and you learn a lot by doing that stuff. So shout out to Chip. I appreciate it, man.
So let's talk about Saturday night. What was your big takeaway?
I think a couple things. I think one, you know, you sort of heard the frustration from Sam after the game with the close loss stuff, you know, like sort of getting his jab in when he could. Hey, right about the that's a close loss, or that's a close win, by the way. So maybe right about that. I think it's in some ways a breakthrough for Arkansas, and in a lot of ways it definitely poses a lot of questions about what Tennessee is and how good this team actually is. But for Arkansas, you know, in a game where the offense, it was kind of tough sledding a lot, and Tennessee's defense will do that to people. They didn't take advantage of so many opportunities, not necessarily in the officially red zone, but certainly in having scoring opportunities and not taking advantage of those. And when you can win a game like that where you don't necessarily play the best, you lose control of the game and then wrestle it back, that's a win that shows a lot about your mental toughness and the kind of team that you have. And so I think for me, those are the kind of the two things that jumped out is the questions that arise for Tennessee and for Arkansas. Finishing the drill for the first time in a while and doing it in a way that's really impressive, and I think says a lot about the intestinal fortitude of that squad.
Tennessee's offense has played so well this year. And, I mean, even over at Oklahoma, I know they scored 25 points, but if you actually watched that game, they got up on Oklahoma and then they just took the air out of the football. They just ran it, you know, just trying to get the game over with late in the game. For Arkansas to slow them down the way they did, what do you think that says about Travis Williams' defense?
Well, I think they're very good at changing what they do to adjust to what Tennessee does. You know, a lot of what Oklahoma did in slowing down that run game and allowing them to not score and put up a ton of points, you know, was running the 3-3 stack. And we talked about it on our podcast this week. Damian Harris, the former Alabama running back, was a co-host of mine. And when you talk to coaches about that 3-3 stack, you know, they talk a lot about how it's like facing the triple option off, you know, on offense. And that there's weird angles, it's very hard to read blocks, and it can do a really good job of making it look like you have a light box and slowing down the run game. And Arkansas did that, and that is not who Arkansas is. You know, I was talking to Sam about it on Monday and kind of talking about that strategy. And he said, you know, it's not who you are, so if you're going to change that, it better work. And it worked to perfection from what Arkansas was trying to do. And they were able to duplicate some of the blueprint of what Oklahoma was able to do. So defensively, you know, it was an impressive schematic game from Travis Williams, and for them to be able to do that is really impressive. And for this Oklahoma or for this Tennessee offense, you have to be able to cover over the top. That switch release is lethal. We've seen it so many times. They have so much speed and so much talent at receiver. Nico can deliver the ball. But if you're only putting five or six guys in the box, you're going to get gashed in the run game. So to be able to have five, six guys in the box, kind of bait Tennessee into running that and then bringing guys off the edge and being able to slow that down. When you're one-on-ones, the defensive tackle play from Arkansas was pretty unbelievable. To be able to do all those things is really impressive. And so it's, you know, not to borrow a cliche of a team effort, but the schematics have to be there. You got to win a bunch of one-on-ones. You need your front four, well, in this case, your front three, to really get the job done. And Arkansas was able to do that. And really, really impressive defensive performance from them at every step of the way.
You know, we were talking to Brandon Marcello, who was at the game, and I know you know Brandon well. Mm-hmm. And he said that, you know, the buzz around Travis Williams nationally is really high right now. What are you mm-hmm. hearing?
Well, you know, it's going to cost some money probably to keep him, I think, at this point. You know, at this, when you look at the way Arkansas runs their program, you know, Sam Pittman, sort of the CEO guy, his coordinator hires are going to be so, so important. And we've seen that. I mean, that literally is your team. And you lose Barry Odom. Being able to hire Travis Williams and have him perform the way that he has, especially this year, you know, plucked him away from Gus Malzahn and a team that and they've built a team at this point that looks improved, that's making the most of the personnel that they have. And when you do that, you're going to be in demand. And so, as they say, the price of the bag going up, and it's going to be tough for them to keep him at this point, especially if these trend lines kind of continue for Arkansas and the defense continues to play the way that they do, because, you know, he's not playing with a Georgia defense. Arkansas's got some good guys, but this is, you know, in terms of talent, there's more talented defenses out there, but their production has been pretty unbelievable this year. So it's especially after Saturday, a lot of people in the business took notice and said, I wonder what that would look like in my place.
For, you know, so much of the conversation after Saturday has been about Tennessee and how this affects their playoff hopes. But here locally, you know, mm-hmm. the talk is, you know, what's the ceiling now for Arkansas? They've got Ole Miss coming in here. LSU comes in next week. Texas down the line. They have to play at Mississippi State and Missouri. Does it change your outlook about the Razorbacks at all?
A little bit. I mean, I always think I was higher on them than most coming into this year. I thought for all of the off-the-field questions and the weirdness of the Bobby hire, I was like, on the field, I think it's probably going to work. You have a motivated coach. You have a guy coming off from a pretty rough situation at A&M where he wasn't really given a lot of the freedom that I think he was hoping to have. And Sam's pretty hands-off with his coordinators, and I feel like it was a good situation for him to thrive. They got some weapons. They really liked Taylen Green. Jaquinn Jackson was a nice pickup. So I think especially now when you look at the SEC, Texas is the only team that hasn't really shown a lot of flaws. And when you get done watching a Saturday of football where Vanderbilt beats Alabama and you've seen Georgia go toe-to-toe with Kentucky a couple weeks ago, if you play well, there's nobody that you can't beat. It's just a matter of playing well and taking mm-hmm. care of business from a week-to-week basis. And if you're Arkansas, you already beat Tennessee. They're probably going to be in the conversation for getting to Atlanta late November. They'll go toe-to-toe with Arkansas and Georgia late in the season. So if you play well, there's not a team that Arkansas really is not going to be able to beat left on its schedule. But it's hard to do that week to week. I think it's a good time for a bye. Anytime you come off of a big win, you know, having a week to kind of digest that and get back in the practice field is probably for the best. You got a lot of time for one to get healthy and for two to kind of refocus. I think it's tough when you have a weekend like that and it's Tuesday or Wednesday before your guys are kind of locked back in. So mm-hmm. a good time for it. And you catch LSU in a nice spot. You know, they're going to be – I'll be in Tiger Stadium this weekend down at Baton Rouge, and that's going to be a tough game for them. So you catch LSU in a really good spot as well. So just got to – you know, it really is comes down to if you play well, you got a shot to win. And if you don't, there's a lot of teams that can beat you.
How much do you think the SEC race has changed the last couple of weeks? Because you had Ole Miss going down to Kentucky, Alabama beats Georgia, then Alabama and Tennessee. You know, obviously they both lose. Seems like it's been quite the shakeup. And then, you know, a team that I think not a lot of people are talking about, but Texas A&M's undefeated, and they mm-hmm. look really, really good.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is very funny to me that for all of the chatter about Texas and, or, you know, the difficulties of the SEC that they're walking in here and they look like clearly the best team at this point, I wouldn't bet against Georgia long term. Mm-hmm. I think they Alabama did some really interesting schematic things offensively to catch them off guard in the first half. But to me, especially playing in Tuscaloosa, you look at that game over 60 minutes. Georgia's got flaws. I want to see how explosive they are offensively. If they get into a shootout, what does that look like? But Georgia, I think to me, if I was, you know, looking at the SEC race, I think it's probably going to be Texas and Georgia. But Alabama and Tennessee will be right there, and you got to stay healthy. There's an element of luck there. There's an element of team management there. So I don't know how much it changed. I think the math changed for Tennessee for sure. Alabama losing opens up a lot of possibilities, but it's going to be a heck of a race here in the last, what, 6, 7, 8 weeks of the season. Mm-hmm.
And then from a playoff perspective, you've got every conference champion from a Power Four conference is going to get in. You're going to get the highest group of five. So that leaves seven other spots. How many of those you think go to SEC and Big Ten teams? Because that's pretty much what the AP poll looks like right now. It's a lot of SEC, Big Ten, and then just a little bit of everybody else.
Yeah, I'm doing bubble watch for our site this week, or this year, I mean. And you know, you look at the top of the SEC, it's hard for me to envision the playoff happening without Texas, Alabama, and Georgia. I think Tennessee will get there. The SEC has a bunch of teams in that second tier that could get there. You mentioned A&M. We'll kind of see what they have the rest of this year. I think LSU will be in the mix. I don't know that they'll get there. And then how good is Ole Miss? That's a really interesting question to me. So Missouri, do you totally discount them now? Can they play their way back into the conversation? I think for a lot of people, going down to Aggieland and losing the way that they did was kind of disqualifying, and it might be. I think if they're sitting there at 10-2 at the end of the year and don't really have a bunch of quality wins, I think that loss in Aggieland the way that it was is probably the difference between getting in and getting left out. But there's a bunch of teams that are going to be in the mix there. I mean, the idea that you could have six SEC teams is not crazy, and I think that's what frustrates a lot of people when you talk about these guaranteed bids. You know, they're in Nashville today with the Big Ten chattering about what the future of the playoffs is going to look like. And I think that everybody in college sports recognizes, hey, the DAC's already stacked in favor of the SEC and in the Big Ten. You're probably going to get more teams in than not. You know, the idea that you need four guaranteed spots, I think, rubs a lot of people the wrong way, because most years you're probably going to get at least four, and then especially even more when you talk about expanding this playoff to 14 or 16 or whatever this looks like past 2026.
One more for you. You mentioned the meeting going on in Nashville. People probably read earlier this week about the Project Rudy proposal that Ross Dellinger reported
sure.
about. So, you know, it all kind of brings home the power that Greg Sankey and Tony Petitti have in college sports. Is there anybody that can compete with those two right now just in terms of influence over the college sports landscape?
No, I mean, the money is just – it's already a lot different in the Big Ten and the SEC. You're talking about a gap of, what, $15 million right now, $20 million right now, and that's going to only continue to grow as the Big 12 and the ACC TV deals just can't keep up with these escalators in the Big Ten and the SEC deals. And so when you talk about the Project Rudy, or I don't even remember what the name of the other proposal is. I mean, yeah, these things would be better for college football, the idea of adding relegation or having a 70-team league in a way that makes more regional sense. But that requires telling the Big Ten and the ACC, hey, we need you guys to cede less power, to cede some of this financial advantage. Why would they ever do that? You know, college football is not an enterprise with any central leadership, and that's a big reason of how we got here and how things don't really make sense and how, you know, Cal can be playing Miami in an ACC conference game played on the Pacific Coast. It doesn't really make sense. Because nobody's really in charge. Everybody's just chasing to try and keep up with the Joneses the best that they can. Mm-hmm. And there's not a lot of, you know, there's not a lot of tales of the Joneses making charitable donations to those keeping up with them. And that's kind of the story of college sports. So, no, nobody's going to be able to keep up with them. That gap is going to continue to grow. And what that looks like moving forward, even after the House settlement comes in and after revenue sharing comes in, I think it's an open question. But the one thing that I don't think anybody's questioning is who's going to be in charge and who is going to be at the top of that heat. And it's going to be the Big Ten and the SEC. The SEC a little bit more on-field dominance. The Big Ten more dominance in the bank account. You tell me which one means more to you, but both of them are going to pound their chests about both of those things.
David, we appreciate your time. Hey, come see us when you're back in Northwest Arkansas. We'll show you around the office. It looks a little bit different than when you were covering Woodland and Southwest and Oakdale.
That sounds good. I think I recognize some of that stuff, so I appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
All right. Thank you, David Ubbin of The Athletic. When we come back, Chip Souza will be on desk with me. We'll talk more about Razorback football, but first a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. We want to tell you about our friends over at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute. They are your source for holistic wellness and your healthy lifestyle changes. They're located in Uptown Rogers, and the staff at Enhanced Healthcare will target your specific health plan for wellness, from neuropathy treatment, primary care, weight loss, and so much more. You can count on the experts at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Rogers. Chip Souza is here with me now. And Chip, one of the things that's changed since when we recorded our podcast yesterday, the diagnosis for Taylen Green remains the same. They're hopeful that he will be back for the LSU game. But what we didn't know when we recorded yesterday, and what we had mentioned on the podcast, was that after the game on Saturday, Sam Pittman said he thought it was a mild MCL with Green, a knee injury. He clarified yesterday on the SEC coaches teleconference, which actually occurred while we were recording, that it was a bone bruise. So it's no ligament damage. Okay. It's just a bone bruise for Taylen Green. And so it feels like that's really good news for the Razorbacks.
So no structural damage, no ligament damage, so that's good. That's basically, you're talking about just rehabbing that thing in the next couple of weeks and mainly probably just resting it.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like anytime you got a bruise, it's just a much better, I don't know what the word would be, but it's a much better outlook, I think, for Taylen Green.
Yeah.
Some other injuries, and we mentioned some of these yesterday, but I want to go through everything that was mentioned either on his radio appearance yesterday or on his SEC coaches teleconference. He said he thinks offensive lineman Patrick Kudus could be back. Defensive backs Miguel Mitchell and Jalen Braxton might also return for the LSU game. Rodney Hill might also be back, the running back. He injured his MCL during the Texas A&M game. They're going to have a new kicker. Kyle Ramsey is out. It sounds like it's a fairly significant groin injury that he suffered on that missed field goal in the second quarter. So Matt Shipley, who was a two-time Groza Award semifinalist at Hawaii, he's going to be the kicker for Arkansas moving forward, at least for a little while. Of course, Shipley kicked that last field goal for the Razorbacks and made an extra point too during the second half of that game against Tennessee. Tight end Andreas Poshka, they're waiting some tests on him. He's been out in concussion protocol for a few weeks now. And then, you know, you've also got Luke Kaz, who's had a back injury. Ty Washington's been playing through an injury in the tight end room. So this is always the case. But anytime you get a bye week, it just feels like it's such a welcome bit of news, no matter when it is, because it gives some of these players who have been beat up and, in a lot of cases, playing through injuries – it gives them some time to heal.
Well, and I think of the ones that you mentioned, Matt, Kudus is the one that, you know, we've been watching this every week to see if he was going to be able to be back, because he was going to be such a central part of this retooled and revamped offensive line. He's not played any. And so that would be good news. I, quite frankly, didn't think they would get him back all season long, and we'll still see if he does play. But that would be good. Braxton would be huge. That would be a huge get for them. They need him in the back end of that defense.
Well, the thing with Kudus is that even if he doesn't play, even if he's not a starter, and I think it might be tough for him to come in and supplant Amarian Harris as a starter, you still have that body on your bench who he's played tackle, albeit not real well last year, but he can also play center. He can also play guard. It's just a versatile player that you can help, you know, plug the holes if you do have an injury, because quite frankly, you're probably going to have an injury on the offensive line somewhere down the line. It may only be a twisted ankle that keeps somebody out for a possession or two, but it's hard to go a whole season with having an injury to your starting five.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And but him not being able to practice, you know, that kind of thing. You know, how long, if he is cleared, how long before
he gets
acclimated?
I think they said he is back at practice now.
Okay, well, then that would be, yeah, that would be good then. And then the kicker, when Ramsey came off the field the other night after missing that field goal, I mean, he was grabbing his groin, and, you know, you could tell, I mean, it was hurt. He was holding that as he came off.
I think he had a groin injury the day that he didn't kick very well in the preseason practice, too. Am I right about that?
I think so.
I know he was injured. I think that was the injury. So it's probably something that he's been dealing with for a few weeks now.
Well, and who knows if that might not be some of the reason why Sam has opted not to go for field goals that would have been of distance. And instead, you know, go for it on fourth down when you're at the 35, 36-yard line rather than kicking, because maybe he has been just dealing with that.
I'm interested to see how Shipley performs, because he was a pretty good kicker at Hawaii. Yeah. I think he was like 57 of 74 in his career there. I'll tell you, the play that stands out to me from him, I think they're playing Colorado State on the last game of the regular – literally the last game of the regular season last year, because it's in Hawaii.
Yeah.
It's like 1:30 in the morning here. Yep. And they run him on the field with like 8 seconds left, no timeouts.
No timeouts, yeah.
He doesn't even have time to line up his steps. He just goes in there and he drills a 50-something yarder for a win.
Maybe he didn't have time to think about it.
Maybe not. But, I mean, it's – you don't – and I know the Grozo Award, they have a lot of semifinalists. I think there's 20 semifinalists every year. But he's a two-time semifinalist, which tells you that for, you know, two of the last 3 years, he's been one of the 20 best kickers in the country.
He's got credentials. I mean, and he's done it, and he's proven it, and he made a pressure-packed kick that you just mentioned. And so it's not like they're bringing a kicker in from, you know, Woodland Junior High. I mean, you know, this is a guy.
Woodland's got a good kicker this year, by the way. I've seen the kid. He's good.
Maybe they need to have him come in. But, you know, so this is a kid that's done it in under pressure. And I think Arkansas will be fine. I mean, how often do you carry two good kickers like that? Not a lot of teams do, but they do. And it's maybe this was meant to be.
Well, and Shipley, you know, he struggled in the spring, which is, I think, why they brought Ramsey in the first place.
Yeah.
Because I don't know that they were pleased with the consistency that he had during the spring. It'll just be interesting to see if, you know, some guys don't practice well.
Yeah.
And they just perform well in games. It'll be interesting to see if that's the case with him.
I know he had a rough outing in the red-white game. He did. Yeah, it was kind of rough.
Slobberhog is back.
Not that we're
surprised by it at all, but the logo was added to the court yesterday. They said it a week ago. They said if we get $500,000, we'll give you the court design back. I said it last week. I think it was coming back regardless of whether or not enough money was raised. But according to Hunter Juracek, who said this yesterday, he said obviously there was a $500,000 matching donation that was going to be given if they could raise the other $500,000.
I wrote that check, by the way.
Congratulations. We'll put your name on the floor. A six-figure donation from an undisclosed donor. And then, of course, Justin Moore, who had a concert in Rogers last week, he gave all of the proceeds, his cut from that concert, whether it be for tickets, merchandise, everything went to Arkansas Edge NIL. Yeah. So they're getting creative in figuring out ways to raise money for NIL. I got an email yesterday that said I guess they've got to replace part of the goalpost, even though they're collapsible goalposts that came down.
Wonder which one. I'm directly challenged, so I don't know if it's east end, west end, north end, south, whichever end it was. The uprights had been removed, and so but on the other end they weren't, so I wondered if that's what it was.
So this email that I got yesterday, I was going to try to pull it up here. I don't know that I'm going to be able to find it in time. But basically it was they're going to cut up 15 pieces of this goalpost.
Okay.
And they're going to be autographed by Sam Pittman and maybe somebody else. And, yeah, they're small pieces. I'm not sure exactly how big. But anyway, $500 a piece.
Okay.
For 15 of them.
I love that. So you said Vanderbilt was doing the same thing with their goalpost, right?
Yeah, they're cutting theirs up.
Yeah.
They had the fire department go fish it out of the Cumberland River.
So instead of the players going door to door selling little chocolate bars or packets of popcorn, they're selling pieces of goalposts.
They're just signing the goalposts and giving it away for $500 a chunk.
Fundraisers are fundraisers.
Yeah, they are. And we've said this before about NIL, that you've got to get creative with it. You got to get creative with it because there has to be some sort of return on your investment more than just having a winning football team or a basketball team or whatever it is that you're donating toward.
I give them credit for that. I mean, they're trying to find ways to market and put a few more dollars in, and every dollar counts.
Here it is, your own piece of history. So see, there's a picture of it right there. You can't see it on your screen. I'm sorry. But, so 6-inch sections of the goalposts from Arkansas, Tennessee are available to purchase from Arkansas Edge. So all the proceeds will go toward Arkansas Edge. And I believe they're $500 for each 6-piece section. And they're all, let's see, they are autographed by Pittman, Bobby Petrino, and Travis Williams.
Okay. Well, there you go. I might get a little piece of it. Maybe I can, for $10, somebody might just chip me off a little piece of paint and make a necklace out of it.
Hey, Chip, why don't you buy all of them and then sell them for $600?
Genius. See, Blake, I need you to be my financial advisor. That's what I need.
You can get your $500,000 back pretty quickly that way. Yeah. Going back to the slobber hug thing on the court, you know, there's these pictures out there of it after they had painted it yesterday, allegedly, that it looks really good. I mean, it just, there's something about that logo on the court that just, I never liked the official logo on the court. It just never looked right.
It looked too businesslike.
It did.
Yeah.
It never looked like it fit there.
Right.
When I see that logo, I think of football, honestly. I mean, that's what I think of. I think of football. It's just like when I see the tertiary logo, the A, I think of baseball.
When you see the slobber hog, you see
basketball.
You think basketball. You see where it's slobbering. It's wild. It's you know aggressive. It's feral.
Mm.
It's feral. It's a feral hog.
I'm excited that this is back. There's something nostalgic about it.
I love that huge snout on that hog. It's like a massive snout out there.
You know, and like I said, there's something nostalgic about it that I like that this is back. Baseball's this weekend over at Baum Walker Stadium. Oklahoma State's going to come in. If you go to our website today, you'll hear from Dave Van Horn. In fact, as we're recording this, Van Horn's going to have a news conference talking about the Oklahoma State series, and I'm sure he'll outline kind of what their pitching plan is. Based on what I've heard about this is that they're going to play pretty much a traditional game Friday night, a 9-inning game. I think the first pitch is
six o'clock.
Yeah. So it'll be something that, you know, is in and out pretty quick. You know, I don't know that you're going to have, like the full time between innings like you would during a game, you know, where they're trying to accommodate television. So I think it's going to be something that goes along pretty quick. And then on Saturday, it's just going to be a matter of how many pitchers are left for these two teams. How many innings can they get in? It wouldn't surprise me if they went, you know, more than 9 innings on Saturday, but it'll probably depend on what they're pitching. You know, I mean, one team may have 15 pitchers they can throw and the other team only has 10.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that looks.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm going Friday.
You're
going to
be there Friday night.
I'll be there Friday night covering it for us, and I'm taking a group of our baseball team, 10-year-old baseball team. We're going up Saturday, and we're just going to grill out some hot dogs and have fun out there and give the boys a chance to see, you know, some Razorback baseball. So we're looking forward to that.
And we're going to talk to Daniel Allen. He covers Oklahoma State for the Ocala newspaper tomorrow on our podcast to kind of get a look at the Cowboys. This is a team that, you know, we talked to Peter Flaherty from Baseball America a couple of months ago. And I asked Peter, I said, you know, who are the teams to watch for 2025? And he named off the usual suspects, the LSU, Texas A&M, Tennessee, Arkansas, those types of teams. He said, watch out for Oklahoma State.
Okay.
He said, I think Oklahoma State could be a team that people are sleeping on. So I think both of these teams are very excited to get to play each other in October, two games that don't count against the record, but I think that it's a type of experience that can make both of them a lot better.
I'd like to see more of this happen. I wish – I've been a proponent for a long time of eliminating the like Arkansas, the red-white –
spring football game
and play a spring football game. You know, bring in Oklahoma State or whoever, somebody regional, Southern Miss, something like that, and play, you know, play a little spring game instead of your red white game, where you could actually see how the players would do and let it be live.
There are a lot of people who would like to do that, and that become your FCS game, where the FCS teams can get a check for coming in and playing a game in, you know, March or April or whatever the case may be, and then you don't have that on your schedule because. Christina and I talked about this yesterday, that moving forward, there's going to be such an emphasis put on having games that will attract viewers, having an Arkansas versus UAPB or a Tennessee against a Kent State, and I know that's not an FCS game, but having those games that are not, you know, name brand program against name brand program, TV at some point in time is going to say, we don't want that anymore. We need something, you know, if we're going to treat college sports like pro sports.
And that's coming.
And that's coming. It's already here in a lot of ways. Yeah. You know, then we need to have a Patriots, Cowboys, a Lakers, Bucks, a Braves, Yankees type deal where it's name brand team and name brand team. And, you know, I equated it yesterday. I said, you know, some of these football games would be like if you took the Carolina Panthers and played the Birmingham Stallions. It just doesn't appeal to people.
No, I mean, and ratings are going to – they drive everything in TV. And the ratings for Arkansas UAPB are not going to be, you know, a blip on the radar compared to Arkansas Tennessee. It's just not. And that's where the money is.
That's right.
And money's everything.
You know, and going back to what you said about some of these games playing out of season – think about like what basketball's doing right now.
Yeah.
They're playing Kansas
yep.
in a game that doesn't count. Last year, one of the best games on the schedule was Purdue in a game that didn't count. They're going to go down to TCU and play them in Fort Worth on November the 1st in a game that doesn't count. And so there's an appeal to this where it gets you better and you get people, you know, used to they would do some of these games, but they would play them in private. You know, like I remember a few years ago, Illinois played, who was it? They played Kansas, actually. Illinois versus Kansas at Lindenwood University in St. Charles, and nobody could be in the building.
Nobody could be there, yeah. Yeah, just.
But now just, it seems like we're getting past that point, and whether it be Arkansas going to Texas to open up the Moody Center or Purdue coming up here, now Kansas coming in here, now it's like, okay, we're comfortable having something open and for not only people to be in the building, but it's on TV too.
Well, and now the baseball, there's no charge of admission to go to these games on Friday and Saturday.
No charge.
But I'm assuming they will have concessions. I would guess they will.
I think
will.
They are. I haven't seen the exact plans, but I think they will.
So they'll be able to generate a little bit of revenue mm-hmm. from concession sales. So, you know, you would have to, you kind of need to have that. I wouldn't even be opposed if there was a small admission, you know, $5, whatever. Kids under 12 get in free. Adults pay $5, whatever, you know, to try to generate, you know, just a little bit of revenue for it. I would have no problem with that. But they're doing it for free.
They're doing it for free.
Yeah.
Arkansas and Oklahoma State, 6 o'clock on Friday night and noon on Saturday. And, again, we'll talk more about that game, quite a bit more, actually, tomorrow. As we've got a little bit more information about what the Razorbacks and the Cowboys are going to do. Chip, thank you for being here. When we come back, Justin McLeod from D1 Softball will join us. He'll talk to us about some recruiting movement in Arkansas softball that's been notable the last week or so. We'll also just kind of get his thoughts on seeing the Razorbacks playing an exhibition game last week. But first, another word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
Hey, welcome back. We want to tell you about our friends over at Bentonville Glass. They have been serving their community since 1971. They're committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them right now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. We talked about Razorback baseball. They're going to have a big exhibition this weekend with Oklahoma State. Fall baseball is it's winding down, almost over now after they've been in the process of practicing for about 6 weeks. Razorback softball, also in the midst of their fall practice. And we're joined now by Justin McLeod. He is a national softball reporter for D1Softball.com. Justin, thanks for being with us.
No, I appreciate you guys having me. It's always fun to talk some softball in the fall.
So you were in Fayetteville recently, right, to see Arkansas play Missouri State for a couple of exhibition games. What did you see from Courtney Dyfel's group?
I mean, my biggest takeaway, honestly, I think this might be the most athletic and versatile team Arkansas softball's had in a while. It was two games, doubleheader, 14 innings. So a lot of room to do things and things like that. But just in watching the general athleticism, just the raw athleticism of the young players, but even some of the returning players, that was the thing that caught my eye first, mm-hmm. was just the overall athleticism of that team. There's a lot of youth, so sometimes versatility plays in with the youth. But, I mean, I saw, you know, some players playing 3-4 different positions, but playing them well, making diving plays and things like that. And then the pitching depth, too, was something that I came in really intrigued to see. And their pitching depth, I think, has a real chance at being something solid. You got a plethora of serviceable arms. Maybe for the first time in a few years, you probably got four or five dependable arms. So I think the athleticism and the quality depth of pitching were probably my two biggest takeaways. Mm-hmm. They look good. Hogs look good. That was the first I'd seen them, obviously, since the regional first, really anybody had seen them. And I came away impressed.
I want to ask you about the recruiting aspect of this, because last week was a big recruiting weekend for Arkansas softball. On Monday morning, they got a commitment from catcher Ava Hodo. Not your publication, but there is another publication out there that has her ranked the number one player in the class of 2026 nationally. They've also got top 100 commitments from Katie King. I believe they've got one from they had Ella Kate Smith here on campus. They've got another top 100 commit in that class. They've been doing this for a few years now. Number one, tell us about these players who they have committed for this class, but then more big picture, you know, when you keep stacking number one class on number three class on number two class, it seems like it's inevitable that at some point Dyfel and this program are going to be able to break through and get to Oklahoma City when you recruit the way they do.
Oh, easily. And I think it's start with the freshman class that's there now, and then you look at the last couple of classes since then. There are some real recruiting wins in there. Some of these freshmen that Arkansas has on campus now were highly touted recruits that Arkansas beat out other SEC teams and, you know, top level programs to get. Some of these recruits that they're getting now in the class of 26, Hodo, you mentioned, and King are to me the two big studs, if you will, in that class at this point. That's the kind of talent you have to continue bringing in. And the fact that Arkansas has been able to do that continually over the last several years, I think it's a huge feather in their caps, but it's also something that's going to continue what they've been doing. If you win a couple of SEC championships, then you have a couple of years that maybe the postseason doesn't go the way you want it to go. Well, but you look at the talent that's coming in, that's the way you stay in that SEC championship conversation. And that's how you stay winning the series you have to win year in and year out. Hodo and King are two big, big gets. You mentioned Hodo's a number one ranked player by one recruiting publication. I think King honestly might be a little bit of a, I don't want to call her a sleeper because she is highly ranked in some of these different recruiting publications. But I think King honestly might be the steal of that class. I remember seeing her commitment early on in the process. And then you add Hodo to that and whoever else Arkansas finishes out their class with potentially. I really like this 26 class. And you've got some extras in there. You've got Amia Johnson out of Georgia. You've even got Macy DeRoboaz, the daughter of the first head coach in Arkansas program history. Mm-hmm. So you've got some different pieces that tie in. I really like this 26 class that they're building.
So you mentioned that you like their pitching. They didn't target any pitchers in the portal, or at least they didn't get any committed. If they did target them, they didn't end up here, but I don't know that they targeted any. What do you think that says about how much trust they have in some of these younger pitchers who are on campus?
Oh, I think it tells you that they believe in their recruiting. They believe, hey, there's a reason we wanted you. And they have three freshman pitchers that are all really, really solid. Peyton Burnham was a late commit. She was originally committed to Oregon State. Then she ended up decommitting and ended up at Arkansas. So that was almost, it wasn't the portal, but it was almost a little bit of a, she wasn't in their original signing class, and then here she comes. Mm-hmm. But then you add Cam Harrison and Lexi King. Cam Harrison playing for the U18 U.S. national team, and she was pretty darn good. So I think it shows you that Arkansas trusts their recruiting, knows the kinds of kids they're getting, but I think it also shows you that Arkansas is willing to live and die by their recruiting, by their eye for talent. Mm-hmm. I mean, the portal's the way of the world nowadays, and we've seen Arkansas snatch some portal classes and even think of a Morgan Linestock last year. You know, she comes in, not necessarily a highly touted transfer, ends up being an All-American for on the pitching staff. But I think it tells you, at least it tells me, that Arkansas is willing to look at, okay, this is who we're recruiting. This is why we recruited you. This is how we're going to build you up. And we're willing to live with what, however we build you up, whatever you are. And that's not necessarily the most common thing nowadays, but Arkansas's won with it in the past. So I think it also is a little bit of, if it's worked before, let it keep going.
You recently wrote something on D1Softball.com, taking a look inside Arkansas's portal class. They've got a couple of big commitments in there, or a couple of new additions. Utah infielder Carly Davison, I would assume she played for DJ Gasso at Utah, and he's obviously Arkansas's hitting coach now. You got Texas Tech utility player Kaylee Wyckoff has come in too. What have you seen from them, and what did you see from them when you were in Fayetteville?
Wyckoff is a heck of an athlete, so let's start there. She catches, she plays corners, play first base, and she's a heck of a hitter. Wyckoff's one of the close to five tool players that you actually have in college softball, like actually truly five tool. She's going to be a big, big piece. And the kicker is she doesn't have to, you don't have to worry about, oh, well, Kennedy Miller's also a catcher. How are they both going to play? Because Wyckoff can play, you know, like I say, five different positions. She's going to be big. And I think she's a top of the lineup piece too. And that's going to be a super handy piece because she can score. She also drives in a lot of runs. And then you have Davison, and her best offensive year at Utah was when DJ Gasser was her hitting coach. Power numbers were up that year compared to her sophomore year in 24. So you reunite her with Gasso, and that's the coach who helped make her as good of a power hitter as she's been. That's key, I think. But I also love what she does for the middle infield. She brings you some solid stability there. I mean, you have to think last year, Arkansas softball, the second baseman was Kylie Halverson, who was a career first baseman that they moved over because they needed a second baseman and needed Halverson's bat in the lineup. Davison is a natural middle infielder, solid defender, and it is a power bat. So I really like, it's a small class, two players, but I really like what each of them do. Like, they're not just coming in just to sit on the bench. They're going to come in and they're going to make a difference.
They go over to Tulsa this weekend. They're going to play Tulsa and Oklahoma State. Obviously, Oklahoma State, a really great softball program. Tulsa's not bad itself. How much better can Arkansas get by playing these teams?
I'll actually be there for those games, and I'm really looking forward to them for exactly the reason you say. That's a round robin you don't see often in the fall. I think it's big, honestly. Number one, you go on the road. You get on a bus. You have, you know, whatever, however long of a drive it is, Tulsa, 3 hours, whatever it is. That's not 8 hours, but it's not necessarily a 20-minute drive down the road or a 10-minute drive to your own stadium. So you kind of start getting used to those uncomfortabilities. Your freshmen get to see, okay, this is what a road trip's like. But the fact that they're playing Oklahoma State, I mean, Arkansas and Oklahoma State the last 4 or 5 years have been two of those teams in the top 25 every week, every year. And the fact that you're getting that in the fall, both teams, yes, they want to see what they're made of, but both teams also are coming in knowing they're good. And so I think you get that in there, and then you throw in a Tulsa team, like you say, really not bad. They've got some good talent themselves. I think you can get a lot from that even in the fall. That's a heck of a set.
Any Razorbacks who, you know, we've talked about the newcomers, you've talked about the freshmen, the portal players. Anybody who's returning, though, who you think might be set for a breakout year?
I'm going to keep my eye on Kennedy Miller until she gives me a reason not to be honest. I know what she did last year as a freshman. I think on the national level, she maybe still didn't get as much recognition as I thought she should have. But I really like her presence at the plate, and I really like her presence behind the plate. So I think she's somebody, especially if Wyckoff can step in and spell her where Miller's not catching every day and so she stays fresh, I think she could have a really solid sophomore year.
And then there's no conference that's more affected by or no sport that's more affected by Texas and OU coming into their conference in softball. They played for two of the last three national championships. OU obviously has won four in a row. Just kind of speak to what you think SEC softball is going to look like, because you got a lot of teams that are in there like Arkansas, like Alabama, like Tennessee and Florida, and there are others who they expect to win big two, and now you got these two new teams coming in. It really changes the dynamic within the conference.
It really does. I mean, we've said for a long time that an SEC conference series is like a super regional. And that's been the case, but I don't think it's ever been the case more than it is now. Even missing, even somebody who misses five or six teams because of the conference schedule, you play eight of the teams, like you're still playing, you really could be looking at a super regional team, two thirds of your schedule, maybe your entire schedule. It adds to the depth that was already there. It makes the SEC the running away best softball conference in the country. And honestly, the kicker is based on how many SEC teams you have, but then also the quality and the depth there. You're getting to the point now where it's not just a possibility, like it's conceivable that you have two or three guaranteed SEC spots in the World Series because you have an SEC versus SEC super regional. Like the depth in the conference now is to that point. You always almost have had one generally year to year where it's SEC versus SEC, but now you're to the point where two or three, maybe even four is like, oh, okay, that makes sense. Like that's how deep the conference is right now.
Justin, we appreciate your time.
I appreciate it.
Great talking to you. Hopefully we see you in the softball season too.
I'll be there.
All right, Justin McLeod of D1Softball.com. We appreciate him, and we appreciate you being here. Hey, if you want to read more about Razorback softball, Ethan Westerman's got a great story on our site right now. It talks about Sam Pittman's influence on Arkansas softball recruiting. Kind of an interesting look at some of the things he does in the Razorback football pregame when they've got these softball recruits over on the sideline. Hope you'll check that out at wholehogsports.com. Be back with one more podcast before the weekend's tomorrow. Ethan will be here with me. We'll talk to Daniel Allen about the Arkansas-Oklahoma State baseball games. We'll also give our predictions for this weekend's SEC football games. Hope to see you then and at wholehogsports.com. Until then, have a great day, everyone.